And by the way, what a great discovery. A number of planets from NASA's Kepler telescope includes a world sharing many characteristics of good old planet Earth. Kepler 452b orbits at a very similar distance from its star, through its radius is 60% larger. Mission scientists say they believed it was the most Earth-like planet yet. Such worlds are of interest to astronomers because they're looking for life. It's got liquid water, they believe, just close enough to its star to not get too cold, not get too hot. It's 1,400 light years away from Earth. That's a long, long way, but what a great discovery. I'm talking about discoveries in a moment. Incoming, the only expose of the incoming of Nibiru. Planet X next with Bob Fletcher on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Weeks ago, we had Bob Fletcher scheduled. We're going to talk about his work on Nibiru, Planet X. He lives in Idaho, and forest fires were approaching his house. Obviously, he couldn't do the show with us that night, but he's back now, and we're going to talk with him about that. I hope all is well. Bob Fletcher, multifaceted entrepreneur, has been on with me before. He's an international consultant, a manufacturer. He merged a small toy manufacturing business back in 1985 with a corporation that turned out to be a supplier of weapons for the U.S. intelligence agencies. How in the heck did that happen? And then let's bring him on because he's developed his DVD series, Incoming, the only expose of the incoming of Nibiru. First of all, Bob, family safe, I hope, right?
Thank goodness. And I wanted to thank a couple of hundred people that had expressed serious concern about my wife and I. It was wild, and it was really, you know, it's really traumatic. I've been through all kinds of stuff, and I'm a veteran of the United States Coast Guard and during the Vietnam thing and all the rest of that, and I've been in and out of everything and been a couple people have tried to remove me many years ago when I was a federal witness. But this was extraordinarily, it's very personal when you actually had to, we had 15 to 1,800 acres totally ablaze in our this wonderful place we live up here in Idaho in the middle of the forest. There's the community we live in is about 200 families here. We only lost seven, fortunately. Pretty much everybody knows everybody else, so to speak. But it was devastating. We had to evacuate. It was literally for 4 to 5 days we were staying in a hotel. And they had 500 firefighters, two or three helicopters up here full-time, an entire encampment near our town. And they were able to stop this thing off. Fortunately, we went 3 or 4 days where every day we woke up, we turned on the news to see if we still had a house.
It's a horrible feeling, Bob.
Well, it was very spooky. It was very surrealistic kind of a situation. And coincidentally, for some reason, my wife, who's extremely intuitive, a few weeks before this happened, she said, "I'm spooked about the forest fire problem potential up here, because all the fires have been around here like crazy, and it's very dry. It had been 103 degrees in North Idaho. It's very weird. Anyhow, she said, "I'm going to pack a couple of boogie bags. I'm going to get everything ready that we need to go out the door and put all of our most important items together, etc." And that was about maybe 4 or 5 weeks before this fire even started. And son of a gun, she was right on. And fortunately, I actually looked out my back, off my back porch, and this huge, beautiful lake that's right out in front of our property, or behind it, so to speak. I couldn't see it. It was covered. The smoke had consumed it. I made a call to the fire department. She said she had gotten two other calls, and the first trucks were on the way up. Of course, that was the very beginning of the whole thing. If the wind had changed, it was only one street, one road, a highway, small highway, that it would have to jump. And it would, if the winds had gone to the south during the next 5 days, we would have lost the entire village.
I know, Bob, that my executive producer, Lisa Lyon, called me the day you were scheduled and said, yes, he can't go on. He can't. And I'm going, what do you mean he can't go on? And she explained what was going on with you. And I'm going, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling. But anyhow, I wanted to thank everybody that, you know, dropped us notes and all the rest of
Beautiful.
That. And to me, it would have been really something because the paperwork, which amounts in the thousands after 30 years of investigating corrupted government, you know, I have, you know, the original paperwork, so to speak, internal memos out of Oliver North's safe and things of that sort. I couldn't replace that, but I guess I'm getting too old to really worry about that stuff.
And, Bob, you are on a program with the most heartwarming, caring audience I've ever worked for. And they're amazing.
That's true. That certainly is true, and I agree with you.
Tell us the story again of your small toy manufacturing business that you merged with a weapons supplier. How in the heck did that happen?
Well, you know, and again, it takes time to really do it good. So I will do it briefly, but it's not going to be very clear.
All right, hold on right there, Bob. I can't believe the time's already at the bottom. This has got to be one of the fastest half hours I've ever gone. We're time traveling. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. But at what point, though, did you stumble into the Planet X?
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to miss that. Later on, which is now, I'm talking 3 years ago, I was asked to look into, snoop into, the disappearance of large amounts of money above and beyond the normal multi-millions that the senators and congressmen that are on the wrong side of the fence might be dipping their hands into. We were used to tracking multi-million dollar fraudulent activities.
Sure.
And funny looking things like Mrs. Hillary Clinton investing $1,000 in pork
futures.
Stocks and pork futures, they call it, and making $100,000 out of her $1,000. Those are the types of things I was used to looking into. But when I started looking into billions and trillions of dollars missing, it dawned on me, well, you know, wait a minute, this is something else. What's going on here? You can't even money launder $1 trillion if you were Pablo Escobar, the drug smuggler.
So, it's too much. What do you do with it?
Right. And then, of course, you know, we had the problem with the gold. With different countries that wanted to get some of their own gold back out of the Fort Knox. And I realized the reality is that gold is all gone.
Oh, boy.
That's why nobody gets to see it, including those companies countries that actually have tons of it left in Fort Knox. They can't get it out.
So they think they own it, but it's gone.
Yeah, right. And so putting it all together, one thing led to another. And I was familiar from back in the 90s, the discussion about underground facilities. And I started looking and realized that major nations around the globe are putting underground facilities in for a limited few numbers of people. In other words, you can't hide an entire nation, but you sure can hide the upper echelon.
Right. Those that you want to protect.
Right. So and one thing led to another, and it took me, like I say, a long time, an awful lot of interruptions with burned-up computers and combinations of all kinds of strange events trying to slow me down on this inquiry. But the bottom line was I finally was introduced to the concept that and documented evidence, what have you, to go with it, that at some point in time around 1983, when they put the first real good telescope way out past the normal distance that we were able to do, and they put out this first infrared telescope, and when it started sending pictures back, apparently it indicated that, lo and behold, there was a Planet X, there was a Nibiru, and they started scheduling how long it potentially may come back in. And this was during Reagan and Bush, a couple of years before I got into it, actually, in 83, 84. So the bottom line was I became convinced, and then after speaking with people that have really chased the scientific astronomy side of this potential Nibiru Planet X, and seeing all of their remarkable investigations and inquiries that they had done, and put it together with the political, the financial, the vanishing of the money, and the reality, of course, that which I had already known about in the 90s of these, I didn't realize how many, but that we had 100 to 103 underground facilities that cost billions of dollars each, for the most part.
And they were black ops budgets, right?
They were a combination. They were either black ops right out in front, or they were black ops where they were stealing money and moving money from other black ops or defense operations and things that nobody in the Senate or congressional levels even have the clearances to look at. And it, you know, this is something that should drive the American taxpayer crazy. You know, most of our senators in Congress have no ability to look at top secret or above.
Of course not.
And there are as many as...
Bob, they can barely look at legislation, bills. They don't even read them.
And of course, you know, George, if they have bills written that are like, 6,000 pages.
Yeah.
Who's
going to read that?
We have to vote on them next week with these other 55 bills. And we want you to go over them real carefully and make your decision on it. You know, it's a ridiculous situation.
So you basically stumbled across trillions of dollars that had vanished, and all of a sudden you're finding out that there are underground survival locations built all over the planet by other countries as well, not just us, right?
That's correct. And some of them were even mutually being co-supported by us, and that's all just political garbage that goes on with other less important events. But nonetheless, we actually have helped finance some of these things and what have you. And, of course, that involves, again, just politics. We try to get information cooperation from a country, and they say, well, you know, we may have information on a terrorist event or something like that, you know, but we need a few extra million over here for one of our programs underground,
right.
And so
bingo,
we take
there
care
it is.
Of it or whatever.
At what point, then, as you were discovering all this, did you put it together that they're building these facilities, they're taking money, they're getting ready for another planet called Nibiru, which is going to raise holy hell as it comes close to us? How did you put that together?
Again, it was probably, I just was piecing all of it together. And again, I did the political side, the financial side, the physical side of how do they even drill these things? How do they build these facilities? Because I knew nothing about that. Well, I knew a little bit, but not much. And all of it was going in one direction alone, that the only thing that could be happening, and even little things like why we've never spent any federal money in the last almost 20 years on our infrastructure, the bridges and all of that stuff, they're all so bad they should be condemned, but we're still not spending any money.
No,
we're not getting off of it.
Not at all.
No. And so, you know, you sit down and you say, wait a minute, there's got to be a reason. These people who have all the money of the world in their pockets anyhow, they've got control, they have all the money, they have all the information of the universe, whatever may be available, so to speak, because they're the first line. We don't see any photographs of the moon that I've believed yet, you know, that haven't been redacted or just not released. You know, we must have 20 million frames of pictures on Mars and the moon over the last 30 years now. You know, but how many have we seen? 14? I don't know. You know, it's ridiculous. So the bottom line is that they have access to everything, but something has scared them so seriously that they've decided to dig holes under the ground, take the ones that they already had, and convert them into survival operations they started for several years consuming about 85% of every dried foods and survival food that was manufactured in the United States. The regular retail operations, in many cases, for 2 or 3 years, couldn't even get their orders filled.
Well, interesting you say that, Bob, because we've got a client called My Patriot Supply. They're one of our advertisers, and they were approached by FEMA some time ago for their entire inventory, the entire inventory of this company's storable food.
Whatever was ready.
And the company, of course, turned them down because they have customers.
That's right.
But FEMA wanted the whole shebang.
Well, they actually did, which, by the way, I included in the DVD that we have available that explains all this, a small, tiny, almost insignificant part. But I have one of the letters that FEMA sent out to a whole, an entire list of American manufacturers of these freeze-dried and survival foods. And basically it says, please tell us, on 24-hour notice, how many tons of the following things you could supply us, how quick you could get it done if given a 24-hour heads-up on it, and what would be the difficulties, and what is it you can't, and what is it you can supply.
And you'll get your check, folks. You'll get your check just like that.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
So, anyhow, the bottom line was I became convinced that Nibiru is real. There are a few people that have studied this. Again, I'm not an astronomer, but several people that have studied it and pursued it and chased it for 30, 20 years of their lives. They had this absolute belief in it, and they can show it and prove it. So I took that knowledge education from those guys. And then all the other realistic points that all went in the same direction. And again, the big deal was 100 of these underground facilities, all of the foods, et cetera, et cetera. And then I even looked into the religious part of it, and all of a sudden, to my surprise, the Pope and the Vatican completely up to speed on this.
They are
involved with it. They even built a couple of years ago, again, unknown to myself because I wasn't looking into it at that time, this huge infrared telescope in Arizona.
And it's they've got their observatory out there. They've got two of them, but one in Arizona. You're absolutely right. Bob, we're going to take this break, and we're going to come back in just a moment with you. We'll probably take a few phone calls as well. I want to ask you about, when we come back, these humming sounds that people are hearing all over the country, might that be the digging of more of these underground facilities? So we'll check into that. Bob Fletcher, our guest, his DVD is called Incoming, the only expose of the incoming of Nibiru. His website, bobfletcherinvestigations.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Oh, my. Bob Fletcher with us as we talk about Planet X, Nibiru, and some of the horrendous things it can do. We're going to talk more about these underground facilities when we come back. And welcome back with Bob Fletcher. Bob, across the country, people have been hearing for years these loud, silent-type humming sounds. Not silent-type, but obviously these hums, these deep hum sounds. Could that be by construction for these facilities?
It actually could be. It's very, and it's hard to tell. I'm completely familiar with what you're talking about. I'd love to get somebody that would scientifically and geologically define that. But the possibility, put it that way, of some of this underground drilling, which is for the underground facilities, which, by the way, is done with these gigantic drills. In China, they have one that's three times the biggest one we have in a single unit. And the biggest one we have, after drilling the hole and pulling it back out, you could drive two 18-wheelers next to each other in it. The Chinese have one that's three times that size, And by the way, I have pictures and some footage and all of that in the DVD related to that equipment that we're talking about. But since so many of these, apparently, to my surprise when I realized it was completely true, they're interfaced and connected by highway, these underground holes like moles drilled going from one location to another. One truck driver had said that he had driven 800 to 1,000 miles under the ground going from one location in Texas to another location three or four states away.
Incredible.
And that with the drilling of those, obviously the sound travels just like going through a speaker wire going into your speaker system. The vibrations of that thing and the humming and the literally drilling sound would and potentially travel through these tunnels themselves, if not through the ground itself, as a conductive for the residents of this drilling sound. So the possibility of somebody hearing something in Pennsylvania when in reality the drilling may be going on in New Jersey is very, very possible. I think that's very, very possible. No question about it. And there's a few things that I wanted to make sure we mention before we do run out of time. Don't want to run
sure.
out of time.
Oh, we've got time. You've got a lot
one,
of time.
Okay, one is, which I'm not going to give you the spill the beans ahead of time, but I have an announcement related to the possibility. No, I don't believe anybody's talked about this on any of the talk shows, and that includes myself up to this point in time. But it relates to the potential of a Hail Mary operation. It's a top super top secret operation to possibly prevent Nibiru when the right time comes to divert it or prevent it from passing close to the Earth.
How are you going to divert a planet?
Ah, well, I'm going to tell you about it, but I'm going to tell you about it a little later on, but don't let me forget about it.
All right, I will not. Now, let me ask you this before we go to calls. In your DVD incoming, you have predicted some major events that would take place in a rapid succession.
Right.
Have they occurred yet?
Well, an awful lot of them have. And again, the bottom line is, you know, anytime you get in and I quote unquote predicting something, which I really hesitate to do. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a seer or anything of that sort. Any predictions that I make are done on just plain physical analysis of what's going on and the direction it's going. Now, several of those were, of course, were weather changes. I had said in the DVD going about 6 months ago when it was first made available through my website, the one of the points was that weather would be affected because already back 2 years ago, it was identifiable by astronomers that something was changing the atmosphere and the temperature on the surface and the normal orbital direction or movement of most all of the planets. And that was starting way out in the farthest ends of the of our solar system. So, and it was actually heating up planets and changing different things like quite slants, different slants on the axis of some of the planets, etc. Now, what I said was, as this thing moves closer in, even though it's still an infrared planet and is very difficult to see until it gets in reflecting our own sun, until that time, it's not going to be easily seen.
Right.
All right. And also, it may see. It's very difficult, and people forget that space, the universe, and space around our solar system is so extraordinary in terms of its forever. All right. So if this is coming in 30 or 40 degrees off of our normal ecliptic, the plane that all of our other planets revolve on, well, then that changes the whole thing. You can't just say, oh, there, it's over there, it's coming in. It may be coming in from behind the sun, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of variables as to, you know, people say, why can't I set up my telescope and see it? You will see it when the time comes when it's close enough. But to get back to what I was talking about, I had predicted, for example, that the end of the winter of 2014 was going to be outrageous, and it was.
It was.
It broke records. The weather now has been altered permanently. You're not going to see things snap back to the good old standard, up to this certain degree during the winter and this to in the summer and all of that. In the last couple of months, the records around the globe have been broken with extraordinary weather beyond anything we've seen in 130 years.
Extremes.
I had mentioned that that was exactly what was going to happen, and it has happened. We also, since I have put this, made it out, finalized it, and made it available, the volcanoes have increased. We have 45 to 55 blowing their tops right now. There is one that has blown under the ocean, undersea, off the coast of Oregon. And what that has done is changed the temperature of the water.
Dramatically.
And what that, I believe, and I know I'm I just know I'm correct on this, the reason we're seeing shark attacks is that this is a shock to the entire global system in terms of where the fishes usually go to school, where they go to their variations in their own feeding, and where they come and when they come. So all of a sudden it's shifted around.
It's pushing them to shore,
The glaciers are melting like crazy, which I put in the DVD. They're increasing now. It has been the fastest melting of the ice caps that's been seen in recorded history. It's like ancient historic writings is the only time when you could match up some of the melting that's going on with the glaciers.
But it's not man-made global warming.
No. See, that's impossible. You know, the bottom line is the few percentages here and there, the variations of how many cows are passing gas in Omaha doesn't have that much of an effect. You'd have to have a lot of really big cows. But it certainly is adding to it, and there are areas where, like in Los Angeles, where it clings in the air so bad, when you fly into Los Angeles, it looks like you're flying into a dust storm or something. It's that bad. But there has been a discovery in the last few months of several infrared planets that had never been seen before, until we now have the telescopes out there far enough. Literally have been discovered to be, I think it's somewhere between 5 and 9 that we didn't really know was there.
And just today.
They are labeled, and they are named, and they are titled, so they are real. And NASA is admitting to, we found a big one over there, and we found a big one here and there. Additionally, when I'm talking about that problematic volcano off the coast of Oregon, that also ties into something that's called, around the tectonic plate off of Juan de Fuca, which is up in Oregon, Washington State, along that coast. And what has happened is there is now an admitted scientific concern. And this doctor, K2, he's that fellow that's rather well-known astronomer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a professor in California or someplace. He's he has an Oriental background, but we've all seen him.
You're talking about Michio Kaku.
Kaku, right, yeah. Correct. I mispronounced his name. He was on CBS last week in the morning. And he said that his concern and others that are aware and understand it are worrying about the floor has actually risen up a little bit off the coast, but they're worried about the tectonic plate that is off the coast of the West Coast, and they're worried that it's going to snap. It's called the axial, it's related to the axial seamount, which is this underground volcano. The bottom line is what he said was that when it snaps, it will create the largest the largest earthquake, earth movement under the water that has taken place in ages, and it's called the Cascadia Zone.
Oh, that's right.
And he said it is far worse, 30 times the energy that would be created if the San Andreas Fault snapped. So that's the one that everybody's worried about, quote-unquote, the big one off of California and along the coast. This one is called the Cascadia Zone, and he said, in fact, that it would kick up a tsunami that would take no more than 10 minutes to reach the coastline, and that it would destroy the entire coast from Seattle to Northern California.
Devastating. Let's take a few calls here, Bob, and then we'll chat about how you think they're going to move Planet X, Nibiru. Let's go to Bonnie in Pahrump, Nevada. Hello, Bonnie. Good to have you with us.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Bob, I have a few questions for you on some of this. In a comment, a couple of weeks or 3 weeks ago, there was a conference at in Washington, and the guy that works or has professed that he worked on Mars for 20 years, a guy by the name of Captain K, he goes by that name, was there speaking. And I spoke with him for a while, and I was kind of picking his brain about some of this stuff and about Nibiru. And I asked him about it and the timing of it. And some people are saying that it is supposed to be here in 50 years, but I can't really get the answer specifically about when. And he has said that it's actually 1,300 years. So I'm wondering what your take is on that.
On entire, you're asking me basically when's
it going to roll along?
It may arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Because okay. He has a completely different story on it. He says that everybody's way off. It's not supposed to be here for 1,300 years. And anyway, if you can answer that, and then I just have one more comment concerning the underground tunnels.
Okay.
Well, go ahead and ask about the tunnels, and then I'll answer both of them.
Well, actually, it's more of a comment about the tunnels.
Okay.
Linda gave a presentation at a Contact in the Desert about the poles flipping and about all of this global warming, and she described that the Earth underneath the crust is made of mostly iron ore and nickel, and all of that is magnetized, which creates our electromagnetic field around the Earth, which protects our Earth from the solar rays and from solar heat. Well, it would make sense, and Linda didn't really consider this in her presentation, that all of this tunneling that has been done, and actually the last numbers that I heard from Phil Schneider before he was murdered, was 135 cities underneath just our country, but tunneling all the way down to South America and all the way up to Canada. And all of these tunnels obviously destroy the iron ore that's under the earth, and as a result, the magnetic fields are going to go down, which is going to create heat on the earth because the earth has lost its magnetism, which protects it from the solar radiation and from solar flares.
So are you saying you think maybe the tunnels has affected, caused some of the problems?
It has destroyed the iron ore.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me address both of them. And by the way, I knew Phil. I was a fairly good friend, so to speak. I was with him only a couple of weeks before he was killed. And by the way, people that don't know, Phil Schneider had assisted in the engineering of about 13 of the underground facilities that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yes, there are about 100 of them underground. They are extraordinary in themselves in terms of size. Some of them in the United States have the capability to handle maybe 10 or 11,000 people inside of them underground. But in terms of having an effect on the globe itself, the reality is it's kind of like saying, I don't know how to even put this. It's like saying three or four real bad, big, red carpenter ants are going to pull down a 300-foot tree. It's not going to happen, and the amount of effect that these holes being drilled would have on the total globe itself is probably insignificant. Now, let me get to your answer related to the potential of when it might come. First off, if it does not come, if Nibiru does not come for another 1,000 or 1,300 years or something of that sort, I will be elated. It would be great. I hope that I am wrong on, and again, my knowledge as it relates to the scientific part of this is totally dependent upon several groups of people, so to speak, that around the globe have been following this as a lifetime career. The best, everybody is pretty well agreed that it's going to be very soon. And I have to agree on my side of my expertise, and that is because the politicians are stealing the money and spending it on the facilities underground and all of the foodstuffs and supplying the local police with weapons for a specific reason, and it is not in preparation for 1,000 years away. Those groups that have the most knowledge on this that I have tapped into personally myself for putting together this particular expose is that they are expecting within a two-year period of time the earliest possible likely passing of this planet to go around the sun and then back out is where it will be seen this December in the sky, and then it will slowly get bigger, and that it will make its closest pass in March of next year, which is, you know, 90 days after December, January, February, March.
Remember her questions, Bob. We'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take your final calls with Bob Fletcher. And, of course, I'm going to ask you that big question in a moment, Bob. How are they going to move the planet if it comes by? But I'll let you finish up on Bonnie's thoughts, okay?
Okay. Well, the again, the best way to judge when it may come is you have to look at everything. And an important point part of it is the what I call the political side. These people are filling these underground facilities as if they will have to get into them and use them and live in them next week. So they're not planning for it 500 years from now, 50 years, 25 years. They are putting foodstuffs into all these facilities as if it was going to be next week. So that's the upsetting part about when you say how soon it might come. And again, the experts, there's a little disagreement, and which there logically may be, and that is if it would be this year or next year when the first sighting takes place. And it is calculated utilizing historical scriptures, etc. All of them in the past have indicated this thing that comes by and blocks the sun for a period of time and goes away again. Going back to antiquity, it always seems to be between March and April. So should it not happen this year coming up, which actually next year, right after the first of the year, if that does not happen, we probably more than likely have a complete breather for another year. But the consensus seems to be it'll either be seen this December in the sky, headed towards coming around and affecting Earth, or it will be a year from then, but it will be coming through, seen in December, and then January, February, and then March is being the assumed date in March that it will pass closest, causing its worst effect.
Oh boy.
Now, to get to another simplistic point, but it's a big question people have, and that is, when are they going to tell us to prepare for this thing, okay?
Or are they?
They are never going to tell us that this is on its way in. And if you stop, and again, simply applying logic and realizing I consider a bulk of these people heading our government at this point in time are criminals. That's all there is to it. So they could care less about the general public. They're hoping to preserve their own bloodline by getting down under the ground before the stuff hits the fan, and they don't know even how well they're going to make out. But they darn well are going to be going down underground, and they can't do it when the total Earth is going crazy, worrying about, there is that thing, it's coming, we can see it, it's getting bigger every week, and it's going to come in, and it's going to cause Noah's floods and completely shut down our electricity. It's going to cause forest fires all over the globe and earthquakes and volcanoes, all of those activities that will take place when this thing comes passing close, all right, due to its gravitational effects and the electronics, et cetera. Now, the electromagnetics is what I'm referring to there.
Mm-hmm.
And it will affect the sun to a point to where we have no idea what's going to go on with it. It is already affecting it. A huge number of the dead animals, which, by the way, has continued to grow in sizes. Nobody's reporting it. But globally, the dead animals, the dead birds, the dead fish, and all of that is getting bigger by the month in terms
sure
of numbers.
It gets stranger and stranger, too, Bob.
Right, and it's all global. And you can always come up with stuff. Well, the reason those 5,000 died, it may have been because of this. But the numbers in some of these, like on the fishes, it's millions and millions showing up in one afternoon dead on the seashore around the globe. It's very scary stuff, folks. And it's, and you know, I'm not going to buy into it that they all got the flu and couldn't breathe through their gills anymore or something. I can't buy some of that. So again, the big deal is paying attention to the politics, because that's going to be a big signal. Here's what must take place from their point of view. In order to maintain sufficient control, you cannot tell the general public, or you cannot permit this thing to get close enough to where 100,000 amateur astronomers look out their backyard and say,
"That's right.
There it is. It's getting bigger, and it's bigger today than it was last week."
Because they're going to tell us.
That's right, because it's going to spread like the plague in one night. Once they get certified visitation, the visual on this thing, it's going to be worldwide. So what are they doing? They've been arming, since the 90s, all the police and sheriffs and fire departments with military equipment. There's been a lot of political grumbling about it recently, but they've been doing that since 95. And when I spoke before the Senate Intelligence Committee, I mentioned back in 95, June of 95, I mentioned in front of the Senate, I said, what's going on? Why are you people doing this? I brought it to their attention. I also, by the way, was the first person to bring the weather control as a weapon on the floor of the Senate and the Congress, and that was in June of 1995 also, when I had discovered what was going on with the use of that. But get back to the subject. The point is that they are going to have to declare martial law for one reason or another in the United States. I'm not worried about the rest of the world.
Maybe that's why they're doing Jade Helm 15 testing. Huh?
I knew nothing about Jade Helm when I was completing this the DVD report incoming. I didn't know anything about it. It had been planned, but it didn't have much notoriety. Basically, Jade Helm is a good dry run on martial law by the military to work out the problems they'll have in controlling the general public in the United States of America when they decide to do it. Logically, it will be a few months prior to starting to see this thing in the sky. All right? So if they, and again, you say, well, all right, how are they going to do it? It's got to be on the basis either of extraordinary terrorist event like the 9/11. If it takes place in two or three states in our country, that will work. They can do it on the basis of moving closer to World War III. That can work too, because we have Russian animosity, North Korean animosity, Iranian, this,
mm-hmm.
this thing we got
yeah.
going.
It's
with
tense.
That.
It's
but
tense.
The big one's China and Russia. They can use either any of those. I kind of, and or they can use of course, a disease like Ebola getting out of control or something, all of a sudden, like in 30 days, all over the place. And the people must believe that it's going to threaten whatever the subject is, whatever the reason. The public has to believe that it's going to kill them. There has to be a death threat of whatever it is that they actually worry about, their families, their children, their babies, etc. Then they will buy into whatever story is given to them as a reason for martial law. But we are watching Jade Helms. That is a dry run to get all the little problems that's going to surface on how to handle civilian persons within the United States. And again, when I first did the, when I completed the DVD, by the way, this is 4 hours. It's a double DVD.
It's huge.
It is big, and it answers, I believe, every possible question you may have. And again, the politics of this thing is really important in terms of when and where and why and all of that. Because, and again, see, when you put all that together with the physical occurrences of what's happening, et cetera, that is why I ended up feeling obligated to do this DVD to explain it to the American people. Nobody had put it together. You know, you have this concern over here and that concern and this. The country's going down the john right before our eyes, but there's a reason for a lot of it, and it's this fear factor at the highest level of the returning of the 10th planet.
All right, let's go to our Skype caller, Eric in Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome to the program. Eric, go ahead.
Hey, this is a recent account I had. I actually had the opportunity to be on the West Coast, and I saw it's already being seen. Several eyewitness accounts are seeing it around the world. Like I said, on the West Coast for myself, it was very, very evident, very clear. If people are waiting for it,
did you see it, Eric? Did you see it?
Already here. It's
we're losing you a little bit on Skype, but I'm not sure people are seeing it though. Bob, are they?
No, I don't believe it. It's not visible yet. It just is not. It should not. Again, on the basis of old historic writings of the previous passes of this thing, I mean, all around the world, you know, the Chinese emperors and the writings on the, you know, on scriptures by the Tibetan monks and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, the Bible also mentions it as wormwood. But the point is, it's not seen yet. There are a lot of errors. Unless you've got a $3.5 billion infrared telescope that we don't know about, otherwise, the only people that are physically seeing it are the government and NASA and these huge infrared scopes that they have. It's just not visible yet. There's a lot of different things going on in the sky, of course, and with all due respect to people that they feel they've seen it, and any of these pictures where you see the sun and then next to it is something like a sun the size of a baseball, and then next to it, something as big as a quarter, it's absolutely not it. You know, it's some kind of a lens refraction or something of that sort. I'm afraid so far we do not see it with average telescopes.
Let me ask you before we go to final calls here, Bob, just so we don't run out of time. How are they going to physically move a planet?
Okay, that's the good one. And whether it works or not, I don't know. But what I have come upon, apparently, you know, we have, unbeknownst to most people, we have what is considered to be an entire functioning, operative space plane fleet, a fleet of space planes. They are the X-37B. This is a miniaturized model, if you will, of the space shuttle. It's almost verbatim identical in its shape and general design. The size is radically smaller, and it is a total a remote control pre-programmed space plane, and we have an entire fleet. They're functioning out of Edwards Air Force Base predominantly. This has been a above top secret operation for quite a while. I was aware of the first workings of this plane and the design and getting started back in the early 90s. They have a program that is called D-STAR. That's D-E hyphen S-T-A-R. And this is Directed Energy Planetary Defense. And this is the application, application into the X-37B craft of a particle beam ray gun. This is the particle beam concept created originally by Nikola Tesla. They have worked on it for ages. They have it functioning now that literally will vaporize mass. And there is another thing that's called a rod directed energy weapon as well, that directed energy shooting and it's done electronically. It's not utilizing anything like a gunpowder or that type of an explosive, but using electronics to fire down a cannon barrel, so to speak, a rod or a group of, I'm going to, for lack of a better term, a ball bearing type of a shot. This goes at such a high speed that it travels at about 7 times the speed of sound itself. The impact using, now I'm referring to a second weapon here, using these ball bearings or this rod itself, and it has the equivalent of 20 atomic bombs at the point of impact. And this is a physical weapon. In other words, shooting a physical, not just a laser. Or
gosh, I hope it works, Bob.
Well, and here's the point. They have it. They are crossing their fingers. They've experimented in our solar system. They have successfully put the craft up and had it up for over 2 years without bringing it back down, and then finally having it come back down on its pre-programmed remote control operations and landed it on a dime at the Edwards Air Force Base. But it is an entire fleet of them. Now, if they get them up there at the appropriate time, and this is the hope of this thing, if they get it up there at the appropriate time and possibly surround this thing with X numbers of these and then smack it simultaneously with particle beams, whatever its effect may be, if nothing else, it may divert it sufficiently to move it off away so it will not pass close enough to cause all of the serious problems. The best case scenario would be total destruction in terms of vaporizing. They have experimented on vaporizing mass such as an entire military tank. I believe they utilized it on vaporizing 2/3 of the Twin Towers.
Also. Well, you're not alone in that possibility.
All right, and that is...
We've got a minute to go, Bob.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All I can say is those of you who have not seen, don't have my DVD, get it. It will answer all your questions and give you the approximate date, and everything else will probably answer everything that you're concerned about on this thing.
How many people survive? What do you think?
I don't know. That's pretty difficult, but but it will be devastating because the people that survive may be faced with an unbelievable long period of time before they're coming out of caves. The destruction will be the worst case situation. It'll be Noah's floods, and plus the now would be everything electronic gone. The possibility of solar flares frying huge amounts of our electronics, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think I would want to survive at my age because I'm too darn old. But the bottom line is, the prediction is that everybody on the coast of many of the coastlines, including the United States, within the first 30 minutes of the closest passing of this thing are going to be gone. You're going to have meteor showers that will cause fires, and anything that's big goes into water will cause tsunamis that will travel 500 miles an hour across the ocean, and possibly it's 100 or 200 feet high.
That's a scary thought, Bob. Bob Fletcher, his DVD, Incoming, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, spontaneous human combustion. Spontaneous human combustion is the mysterious phenomenon of a...